Hello and welcome back to The Dive, Season 8, Episode 11. Time flies. We're already looking at finals weekend ahead of us. Are you excited, everybody?
Yeah.
Huh? Huh? Yeah. You're going to be there?
I'm going to be there.
I heard it's going to rain. That's unfortunate.
Wait, no. Don't tell me that.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's supposed to rain all weekend.
That. He already signed his contract. He's going to be there in the rain.
I hope we got a waterproof computer.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting up stuff right now. They're going to get heaters and
tents
and overhead stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe some cute little rubber boots.
We're going to
be out there in the puddles.
We're going to make the billion-dollar Las Vegas globe thing just look like a trash can with the stuff that we're planning. It's truly going to be amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty insane.
Some other unfortunate news. We saw the Riot MMO is delayed. I was sad to see that, but I also kind of expected it. You know, that with Ghostcrawler leaving earlier, and then Marcus talking about they're changing directions, and they really wanted it to be different from an MMO that you can play now. Like if you're pushing for something to be that crazy innovative, then I really want to play something now, but if you're gonna really need so many changes, then I guess it's gonna it's gonna take a while.
They called it like a reset or like a full reset, I guess, right? So
they're
kind of like wiping the slate clean. I will say, I don't know if this is just me or just my circle of friends and whatnot. I know that in the tweet coming out from Mark Merrill, who's saying that people don't want like another similar game. They want something new, and like that's what they're gonna go for. They want to be innovative.
You're like, I'll take another WoW.
I'm like, I will take a League of Legends tab target MMO.
Yeah.
That's just WoW, but better, right? Yeah. And I don't know if this is a hot take or a weird take or whatever, but when I think about, League, I think innovated on and improved upon, certain things from Dota that I really loved. Like I played Dota, I played Han, I played Dota 2, then I played League, and I'm addicted to League, still playing it 10 years later. I love that game. I don't think the wheel was reinvented there, personally. TFT played all the time. Again, it was kind of based on what we saw from auto battlers and stuff that had already been out, like auto chess and stuff, right? There's like versions of these games, Valorant. Like, it's not that these games didn't innovate or change anything. They did, but I do think they were building upon like an existing thing. Even Val, like I think Valorant's a great game. I played a ton of Counter-Strike growing up. Obviously, they've added abilities and stuff, and they've added their own tweaks. But it does feel like all these games that have had tremendous success have been somewhat based on like other games that have come before them. And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I play like every good RPG that comes out ever. They're not reinventing the wheel. They're all kind of based on D&D largely, whether it's like Divinity Original Sin or Baldur's Gate or all these games. Mm-hmm. They're all based on the same stuff. They just add their own improvements and advancements on top of it. And so that's kind of, at least speaking for myself, what I was hoping for from the League of Legends MMO was that it was basically going to be like a WoW-esque MMO, but set in the League of Legends universe, which sounds really freaking cool. And just with like combat improvements and movement improvements and things like that, that are just kind of, you would expect to come out over time.
Yeah, I just want to play a Blitzcrank. I was going to roll like a
You're
level...
You're going to main Blitzcrank?
Yeah, like a level 60 Blitzcrank, like run around and be a robot. It was going to be so cool, but I guess I got to wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard because there's MMOs take the most investment of any type of game to make, and so it's a huge cost that you're undertaking when you're going to make one, and so you want to have it get a giant player base like original WoW or something like that, like the heyday. I say original, I don't actually mean when WoW first came out. I mean like the first many years of WoW where it was absolutely dominating and got so many players. Exactly. You want a really, really big player base, because since WoW, the history of MMOs is just littered with corpses of games, right? Yep. There have been so many failures of MMOs just all over the place and so many different kinds that it's so hard from the outside to be like, just release your game, give me something that's good, especially with, I kind of feel the same as probably, you and your friends group, where I'm like, oh man, if they just gave me like pretty damn good WoW, I'd be happy, because WoW has also been going downhill. So I'm like, you just have to be not going downhill, and
just
you'll
go up.
And by
just make it good,
change the direction.
Just by them going, just by a blizzard going down, we're like, we'll be going up, kind of, right?
I mean, it is crazy though, because as much as there was some subscriber data that came out recently for WoW, I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was saying that the subscribers were something like 7 million a month.
Yeah, I saw that,
or something like that. I know back, these are just off the top of my head, but I remember when I was playing back in like 2010 when it was like really popular, I think it was more like 16 million or something. But it was interesting because people had said, oh, Final Fantasy has actually surpassed WoW and it has more subscribers. But Final Fantasy's data was out and it was like 2 million. So WoW still has like three times the second most popular MMO. So this game, after 20 years or whatever, 20 plus years, is still kind of the king of the thing. So it is obviously very difficult to dethrone. And when you talk about development costs, it's like, WoW has 20 years of content built into the game, and people still complain there's not enough content, right? Because hardcore players are just going to blast through it so fast. So that is, I think, one of the most difficult things about any MMO. When you come out with that game, it has to have an absurd amount of content, because the kind of people who like to play MMOs like to play all day, every day. It's their only game, and they will blast through that stuff so fast.
It's super tough, because I think every time I've tried a new MMO, whether it's like, you know, New World, Wildstar, like Final Fantasy, you have to balance having a good new player experience, which I think most of them kind of like all in on, because like if you don't like the new player experience, you're not going to get to the end game.
Yeah,
but then you get to the end game and you're like, wait, there's nothing here. Like, why did I just bother playing this? I'm going to put it down and not pick it back up again. So it's disappointing. Like, I love MMOs. I think everyone's been looking forward to the Riot one, and I still will be, but you know, it's
yeah, now we're looking further forward.
Yeah, I mean, like, hopefully in their retirement home it's coming out, like we can all just game in our wheelchairs and whatnot.
I have been saying since I was like 15, I was like, I already know where my whole life is going. I'm gonna be a grandpa guild leader when I'm 80, 90 years old. I'm still gonna be in there,
have our 70 year old LAN parties playing the Riot MMO when it comes out. Hopefully it's gonna be bomb when it eventually does come out. I'm excited for it still. The Immortals head coach Sharks also just got fired recently, which I've got to say I think is kind of crazy. It feels like there was, as much as they did not finish, you know, where they wanted to finish, they finished last, they got eighth, there was still actually a lot of positive talk about their team and how they're really competitive in scrims, and how people I had heard that they were even still scrimming throughout playoffs because all the top teams wanted to scrim them, because they're actually really still, you know, a good practice partner. And you know, they had actually a lot of games that were like throws, basically, where they're in winning positions. They could have easily got a couple more wins and finished a little bit higher up. But I just think it's crazy that after one split with, like, you know, young players, mixed language team, you're getting rid of the coaches when this team has been, this org has been struggling for a while. It's like, okay, eighth this split, then we have 10th in summer, 9th in the previous spring, 9th in the summer before that, 10th in the spring before that, 9th, 10th in lock-in before that. And it's like, okay, let's look at all the coaches that you had during that time. They had Giloto and Malaclips, and then Dardock. Then they got rid of Malaclips. Then they got Invert. Then they added Nightshare and Joey. And then they got rid of Nightshare and Invert and Dardock. Then they got Mabry. Then they got Xmithie. Then they got rid of Mabry and Xmithie. And now they got Sharks and Joey. And then they got rid of them. And that's just in the last 2 years. Like, that's actually crazy, right? It's like,
yeah.
Well, it is really hard to find a coach. We had that whole long discussion about, and so, coaching, I don't know what went on inside Immortals, but I will agree with you. This is the best last place that they've ever gotten. You know, they're still last place, but they were looking way better than they usually do.
But also, if none of those coaches are good, if that's the argument that like they were all good hires and there was no mistakes, but like they just like didn't perform or whatever, then you have to give the coaches time to develop, right? At a certain point, it stops being the coach's fault and it starts being the people's fault who are hiring the coaches.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's been my biggest issue with, you know, I criticize coaches and LCS teams and stuff because, like, I had some bad experiences. But it's not, like, it's just the coach's fault. It's kind of, like, the whole system, right? Because these teams are trying to play money ball, right? It's, like, they just roll the dice. They're, like, all right, we're going to pick up this GM, this coach, these players, and let's see what happens. Oh, eighth place? Scrap it. Let's try again. And so it's, like, as a player or a coach, that's terrible, right? It's like your entire career hinges on your success from one split, and it's a zero-sum league. There's going to be a last place team. And so if you're just trying to, like, you know, come up with short-term results, band-aid fixes, your team's never going to be that good. And yeah, I mean, you don't really know what these coaches are doing. I think that as long as the coach is working hard, if they elevate the players, they should definitely get more than just one split to prove it. And yeah, I mean, obviously, you look at Immortals results, clearly this strategy of the revolving door is not getting them anywhere. So I think trying to settle down with somebody and build something,
work towards something,
would be good.
I mean, they always have studies in every type of career path where security in your job always leads to better health, better mental health, better performance, because you take away some of those fears that can definitely cause you to do different things as well, especially in a competitive environment. But yeah, I mean, we don't know what actually happened within the team and how the coaching went on, but from the outside, it does.
I mean, just look at how many different players that this team has had over the last couple of years and how many different coaches. It's just too much. At some point, you have to commit to some direction and try to give the people time to develop. Because it's like, even look at Quid last year versus Quid this year. Quid's probably going to win the MVP. Everyone seems to think that he was the one who a lot of people were voting for. And his improvement from last year to this year was absolutely enormous, right? If he was on Immortals, would he have just been cut after last split? Because last split, he was pretty bad, right? You know, maybe you wouldn't get that chance. And there is the ability for players to actually develop and improve. We see that across the world there, where people can have a terrible start and be way better the next year or in a couple of years.
Dokla contracts, Palafox was such a big story of how much CLG and Energy invested in these players. And to your point,
Yon
did not get
TL
rid of them
this whole time.
Yon with TL, how Spawn has been coaching him for like 4 years straight through Academy, sticking on TL.
Quid with 100 Thieves.
Through all of the criticism. So like, there are a lot of examples of orgs, teams, you know, having success through sticking with these types of players and continuing to build on them, even when there is lots of outside pressure, by the way, of like, oh my god, you know, this guy's the worst jungler in the league, get him out of here, or this guy was so int last year, get him out of here. It takes a lot for GM or an org to stand by a player or a coach when there is a lot of public backlash too. So that to me is why, when there are success stories around sticking behind, you know, a player or coach or something that does find success after having bad, you know, performances or bad rookie splits or something like that, I think deserves so much credit, because it is really hard to make that call in the face of public outcry.
Yeah.
I think in the case of Immortals, though, like, do they really have that? Because
they've been last for so long.
Yeah, people just don't care about them because, like, they've just been the last place team since, like, when people think of Immortals, I feel like a lot of LCS fans, when they hear the name Immortals, they still probably think of, like, the Huni, Reignover, Pobelter, like, 2016 team. And it's like, wait, guys, that was, like, 20 years ago at this point. So, I mean, new version of Immortals just hasn't really, like, I don't know, found their footing since they've been back in the league. And so, in my mind, they have nothing to lose. I think they should just try building off something, like, find a player that you are just super confident in, let them influence, like, who they want as a coach, who they want as teammates.
That was supposed to be Revenge. I remember they had that whole talk about when they got Revenge of, like, he was involved in building the team and he was going to be their guy, but that lasted a year, I think.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. You know, what can you do?
All right, from the bottom to the top then. How about our Kia top six MVPs? Whippo, River, Inspire, JoJo, Busio, Quid.
Yeah, this just came out. This is the top six vote getters for the Kia MVP. Of course, it is for the spring regular season. It's not including playoffs. And they are going to be announcing the actual winner of the MVP on finals weekend, this coming weekend. And the top six, as you said, Whippo, River, Inspire, JoJo, Busio, Quid. Busio really stands out to me as surprising.
Yeah.
I was actually shocked that he was in the top six. I know he got first team All-Pro, but I just never considered him as an MVP candidate, because I never thought he could be considered as like the leader of the team, like the main reason for their success. And I feel like that to me is like a prerequisite. It's like you have to be the most valuable guy on the team, the guy who's making the biggest difference on your squad. And to me, it felt like Bwipo and Inspired were way more drivers of that. I would even say like Jensen felt like more of a driver of that. And I didn't even really consider him. So I was pretty surprised to see him in the top six.
Are you for sure? You're sure that this is the top six vote getters? Yeah. Or these are, okay. Because I would have thought when looking at it, it's just like, oh, names that they kept in that are...
No, that's
that
the top six vote getters.
Wow.
So Busio is the only shocker there for me. I knew that...
I agree. So that, much so that I'm like, whoa, is that even what
even
it
more
is?
Than Jensen. Jensen is just permanently doomed to never get recognition.
Even from his own teammates, if you watch pros.
Yeah. I mean, from anybody. It's surprising to me. I feel like he's had a really good split. I think part of it is that he's like one of the... I guess he's kind of quieter in the way he plays. He's not the guy who's going to pick like Yone and just like style on the entire team. He's just going to pick a control.
Pick Orianna and then
be
style
really
on
solid, not get punished by things that other players probably would. But that's the stuff that's like, you know, not as impressive, you know.
He's silently smurfing.
Yeah. I mean, like people don't see the pitfalls you've avoided to like have a steady game. They just see, oh, okay. Like, you know, he's not making montage clips, you know, whatever.
It's also funny because this year he was actually doing a lot of trash talking and having a big personality in the LCS. You know, his tweets, also his pros appearances where he was really outspoken, really entertaining, I thought. I felt like he was doing a lot of the brand building and stuff outside of the game this time around. So I was like, oh, for sure this time he's going to get recognized. But
dude, really. His tweet about... was it energy?
APA.
No,
it was
TL. The how would a cold player do?
Yeah. I mean, their content
that was a thing.
So using their own content that set themselves up for that one perfectly.
So good.
Was well done.
I mean, Jensen, I think is getting more credit because people have been like, retire, bro. It's over. For like, people have been, you know, kind of pretty negative on him, especially when he was on Dig, when he was on a bad team. So I think people are like, okay, Jensen's good player. He's on a good team. He's having success, but definitely not getting credit as far as, oh, you're the best, or you're the top of the league, or you're in conversation for MVP. I mean, speaking of pros, I thought this last episode of pros was actually crazy. Like the Bwipo and Inspired, they're super entertaining, and they are trash talking everyone, you know, but including their own team, which to me was the part that was crazy, because I know if it was me and I was sitting there, probably as Masu or Busio, because they kind of talk about them like they're just these clueless noobs, but especially if I was Jensen, I just felt like a lot of the stuff came off as extremely condescending, to the point where, you know, at one point Bwipo was talking about how part of the reason for his success, he was giving a massive amount of credit to Inspired and saying Inspired does so much for the team. He's always on the players. If you make any mistake, he's on you. He's going to get on you. And Bwipo was saying basically like, oh, I don't have to do that anymore. He's like, it's great. As a top laner, I can have so much success because I don't have to watch, you know, Busio and Masu laning and make sure they're not making mistakes. I don't have to watch Jensen and make sure he's not making mistakes, that he's pushing out his lane at the right time and he's doing this and stuff. And I just know it's like, if I'm Jensen, I'm listening to that, it's like, Jensen has done well internationally. He's been in the league for like 10 years. He's won all kinds of titles on different teams. He's won all kinds of all pros. He's made it to MSI finals. He's made it to semis at Worlds. And it's like, I don't know. It just kind of blew my mind, I guess, that Bwipo was talking about him as though he's like this clueless rookie who like needs to have his hand held through like how to play his lane and stuff. So, I mean, they're extremely confident, and Bwipo and Inspired obviously very, very complimentary of each other. And I don't know that they see it kind of like how I saw it, but I was just thinking from the point of view of if I was listening to this as their teammates, it's like, wow.
Yeah, maybe he's just high off their win or something, and it's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to say my piece now. But, yeah, maybe a little collateral damage being done in the process. I don't know. Sometimes you don't really. He might look back and be like, "Ooh, like I didn't really mean to come across that way," or maybe he's just like, "Yeah, you know, my team sucks. I don't know."
I mean, did you see Inspired's piece, his features piece that went out on broadcast this last weekend as well, where he was saying, you know, everyone knows why EG was successful, and everyone knows why FlyQuest is successful. It's because of me. You know, like I took all these rookies on EG and made them good, and now I'm taking this team FlyQuest and making them good too. And he just straight up said it. I was like, damn, like that's some confidence. I respect it, but also I don't know that, like, as his team, like, that just feels so bad.
Yeah, it's
like,
really,
I'm dragging these idiots across the finish line.
It's an optics thing, because I think, yeah, like you said, confidence is good. I think, you know, you should think that stuff, but I don't know if you necessarily benefit from saying that stuff, right? It's like, I think
you absolutely do not benefit from saying.
Oh yeah, because it makes you look really cocky and kind of arrogant. You gotta more conduct yourself in a way where it's like you lead people to that conclusion, but you don't say it, right? It's like you gotta imply it in a subtle way.
So you are cocky and egotistical, but you don't show it to the public.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you hide that part.
You gotta make them think that it was their idea, but you're incepting the idea.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
I like the Machiavellian levels here. Honestly, also, it really depends on what your personal relationships are with your teammates.
They may be completely unfazed
with this type of stuff, yeah. Because I know that a lot of the structure of this team is this older brother teaching sort of environment that they have, where very clearly they were like, you know what, we're bringing in a bunch of veterans for the top side, we are bringing in some rookies on the bottom side, and it's going to be a really good learning environment. And if everyone can bond around that and everyone has the same kind of direction and perspective, then it can be a really healthy thing. You definitely don't want to be too negative on teammates, especially in the public, of course, but it often does really help if you have a super strong relationship with them. And we've had stuff in the past where after their victories, you know, Bwipo's getting up and like hugging both bot lane members and being so complimentary of them in other instances too. So I kind of took it as it's one of those, but you know, there's definitely some strongly worded quotes, especially from a couple of the recent pieces of content.
I mean, it's really fun to listen to, and they are, you know, complimentary at times and stuff as well. And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with being able to have that relationship, you know, behind closed doors. You want to be able to say, Meteos, you suck to this game. You need to be here. You need to be there.
Yeah, whatever.
And you need to be saying, 100%. Well, actually, the reason I wasn't there is because of X, Y, and Z, and be able to, like, you know, hash it out and have those kind of conversations. And I think that part is really cool. And Bwipo gives so much credit to Inspired for being the guy that, you know, doesn't let anything slip. He was saying that one of the things Bwipo was talking about was that he finds it kind of like, it can be really tiring. It takes a lot of energy, basically, to, like, anytime someone makes a mistake or there's an issue, to be able to just, like, confront it head on, he said, can kind of get exhausting. And so people can get to the point, and he was saying himself, can get to the point where it's just like, well, I'm just not going to bother. Like, they'll just fix it themselves or they won't, kind of thing. And he was saying Inspired never lets that happen. Like, he's always on it every single time. Whether it's you're not playing off solo queue, or you're doing this, or you're doing that, or there's miscommunication, or no matter what it is, he's always on it. So he was like, he's the coach of the team. Like, he's the running the team. He's doing all this stuff. And I think that's great. I think it's just, it changes the vibe when you're not, like, when you're talking negatively about your teammates to the public, because that I know can feel really bad, right? It can feel like you're kind of being then like talked down to or whatever. But it's a really fun episode to listen to. I would definitely recommend checking it out. It was with Inspired, Dokla, Bwipo, and Emily, and they're saying, as much as that stuff was kind of, I thought, condescending to their teammates, they are way more extreme to other teams. He was talking about, like, Bwipo was talking about Fudge. Fudge is an absolute NBC. He doesn't do anything. You know, you just bluff him a little bit, and he plays scared, so he can't play any winning matchups, and blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know, just they're going in. This guy's an NPC. That guy's an NPC. They don't do anything. He doesn't do anything. Berserker's not him. I don't feel anything when I play against that guy. Like, everyone was just... There's no hold barred.
Both Bwipo and Inspired are extremely self-confident people, and always have been.
Yeah.
And they're not scared of taking out the flamethrowers, that's for sure.
One thing that was cool, though, was Inspired. I mean, Inspired obviously has a lot of respect or thinks highly of JoJo, and he was kind of saying that he felt like JoJo in that series was not really deserving of so much criticism. Basically, that the reason he was saying that JoJo was dying was because, in his words, he was the only one doing anything. And, like, the rest of his team, he was saying, wasn't doing anything. So JoJo tries to do something, and he gets punished for it, and he dies. And he's like, that's how the game should be played. But you look like an idiot because your teammates suck, basically. And it's also kind of interesting because he was also kind of extending that to APA. He was saying when APA was getting flamed, he felt that it was somewhat unjust, and that APA was basically just getting punished because the team wasn't doing anything on the map. So it's like, okay, you're playing zigs or whatever, and you have to push out the side lane, but your team isn't actually covering you, or your team isn't actually making something happen on the other side of the map, so you die and you look like an idiot. But he was actually kind of defending APA in that way. So
I thought that was interesting. I heavily resonate with that point because I think that is the trap that teams fall into, is like, you know, if people become scared of making mistakes, you look kind of like the NPC that he's talking about. You're the person who, you don't want to make the game losing mistakes, so you just don't do anything, right? Like, oh, this guy looks like he's taking a bad trade. Oh, but it could be a bait. Like, I don't want to, like, you just don't make anything that has the possibility to go wrong, and that's just going to look terrible ultimately, because if everyone's doing that, nothing's going to get done. You're never going to make any good plays happen. And yeah, you know, if you have one person on the team who is playing aggressive, putting out pressure, and then they're just getting focused, yeah, they're going to die a lot. And I've experienced this in teams. I've seen it happen a lot, and I totally agree with it. And that's why, like, you can't really let the community flame and sentiment get to you as a player. You just have to, like, be confident in your understanding of the game, what needs to happen, and ideally have people on the same page. And I think that, you know, he could be right for sure, because it looks like TL in general is getting a lot more aggressive and everyone's looking better.
Yeah, and for the series that FlyQuest played against Cloud9 too, where they clearly identified, you know, mid lane and JoJo as a target as well and keep on going after him, I kind of agree on his point too of not flaming, like, JoJo is getting too much flame for it. It's kind of a badge of honor if multiple teams that you have been on, your opponents always identify you are the biggest threat and they spam camp you and throw all of their resources at you so that they can, you know, keep you down. And then, you know, it's a surefire way to success, which is, I think this is something that Cloud9 are really going to have to overcome, because if you look at the whole season of data that we've had in spring, JoJo for the entire spring has been for sure the best performing player. And in the biggest successes that Cloud9 had, you know, everyone else was playing a lot better. And so it just looked, you know, amazing across the map with some big improvements. But when they falter and the enemy team is just camping JoJo again, it's like, this is a reliable strat versus this team. So with the match coming up between Team Liquid and Cloud9 and mid laners for both these squads being, you know, huge conversation points, I'm very, very interested to see if either of them, you know, try and repeat that, because the player, the champion pools are also so different. If APA and Team Liquid stop picking Ahri and stuff like they, you know, did when they were playing against FlyQuest, and they just have him on some Ziggs and Aesol and some long range stuff and AoE damage, I don't know. It's so interesting to me to go through the different possible ways that these two teams can play either around mid or to, like, stifle enemy mid.
I mean, the series have looked so wildly different. Like, when Cloud9 played against 100 Thieves, and it kind of was this, like, full court press where it felt like every lane is playing aggressive, so even if they punish JoJo, the other lanes are getting so much for it. And then you look at, you know, FlyQuest when they played TL, it was just the bloodiest series we've ever had. You know, most kills, it was like 50 more kills than the second most kills in a series ever in the LCS. It was ridiculous. You know, one of the most bloody series we've had anywhere in the major regions in the world. Then you juxtapose that with the Cloud9 FlyQuest series, where it felt like FlyQuest just kind of didn't really want to fight them ever until, like, they had, you know, the proper setups, until they were around objective or whatever. And that series was, like, way more passive and way slower, I felt like. So it's kind of been interesting seeing, you know, these wildly different playstyles and wildly different series coming out from similar teams, just based on, you know, teams, certain teams being able to, I think, kind of, like, impose their will somewhat on their teammates and make them kind of, like, shape their playstyle to them. But I think for the TLC9 series, it's like TL has been very vocal about, you know, they are basically trying to play more like they play in scrims, where they're not going to allow teams to just take things. You know, MT was talking about how, you know, in scrims, it was like, okay, they're trying to invade for something, or they're trying to fight us for something, and we just say, no, you can't have that. We're just going to fight you. And on stage, it was kind of like, no, that's fine. Just let them have it. We'll fight at the next dragon, or we'll fight at the next thing. We have a scaling comp. Like, we're just going to go late. Don't worry about it. And they've kind of just arrived on, we're going to play these scaling 5v5s, but we're still going to fight you for everything. And I think it made it really, really fun to watch, because they're not just seeding objectives. They're, you know, having faith in their ability to make things happen. even if a play, say, fails on bot side and someone dies there, they're immediately respawning and then just using that respawn to just, like, run top and start another fight or, like, start something elsewhere or do another
early intake. Home guards.
Exactly, right?
Tempo
it's,
death.
It's, yeah, exactly. It's a quick base. But I think it's really cool to watch that. So I feel like this is going to look more like the FlyQuest TL series did than the C9 FlyQuest series did. Like, I think it is going to be a brawl because I think TL are going to scrap for everything. And I think, you know, Cloud9 is another team that generally, when a team is looking to challenge them, they're not going to back down. There usually are kind of a lot more of those, like, scrappy players, I think, especially like JoJo and Blabber and whatnot. So I think it's probably going to be pretty action-packed.
Yeah, I actually, I filmed a podcast with Blabber and JoJo right after their series. Like, the timing was rough.
How sad were they?
Honestly, they were doing pretty well, like, considering, like, obviously, like, you know, they weren't feeling great.
They just got absolutely Goomba stomped.
Yeah, dude, I was like, I wasn't the one who, like, set up the time. I was messaging Cloud9. I was like, oh, we can totally reschedule this, dude. Like, if that was me, if I'm a player and I just got completely stomped 3-0, like.
Hey, JoJo, I know you just got 0 kills in a series and everyone's flaming you, but would you like to do a podcast?
Yeah, I would say hell no. Like, I would not even leave my room, but that, you know, they did show up, and yeah, the stuff they were saying was super interesting about, like, that series and other teams. I actually got to ask them the question that I've been wondering, like, the whole split is just, like, you know, why is APA always getting Ziggs and Aesol, right? If those are, like, his most successful Seriously. Champions by a lot. And what they said was it's because TL's bot lane apparently is, like, so good that you can't afford to not ban bot lane against TL, which I thought was interesting. It's not something, because there's so many of those things in draft where you don't really know a team's reasoning for doing something. It could be a bunch of different things, but apparently, yeah, that's like the sentiment around TL. It's like their bot lane is just that good.
It's been really cool, especially over playoffs, where we've been able to highlight the, you know, Yannick or JJ bottom lane too, because this is one of the stories of the organization sticking with them. Because a year ago, even when he first got onto the main team, there was so much outcry. Everyone was like, bench this guy. This guy sucks. But we would still hear behind the scenes, oh, yeah, he's killing it in scrims. You know, even when they went to international event, we were talking to G2.
It was at MSI, and they had just gotten 8th or 9th place. They didn't make playoffs.
Yeah.
And then they were apparently doing really well in scrims against G2 and other international.
Romain was like, yeah. And TL, they're going to go really far. You know, their bottom lane's insane. Like, we love scrimming against them. We're like, whoa, that is so different from, you know, what we've seen on stage.
He didn't even know that they were, like, a bottom team. He thought that they were, like, a top team.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're like, they just finished 9th. He's like, what?
Yeah, it was so.
And he's that good?
I just love, you know, when stories like that come full circle. And then you get to highlight, you know, how long they've invested in him. And, like, Spawn has been the coach for like 4 years directly with him through Academy and everything. And for them to actually do it on stage is super cool to watch. I also know part of the shot calling and being aggressive and fighting stuff is a lot of Core JJ. And Umpty, in a lot of our interviews, he's like, yes, sir, Core JJ, sir, when he makes shot calling, you know, choices now. So
General got demoted.
Dude, he's a faithful soldier. You need those in teams. Like, I think that's actually such an underrated part of a good team. It's like, you need the follower, like, yeah, the yes man, the guy who's gonna, like, give you confidence to make the calls, be like, yeah, dude, no matter what you say, it can be terrible, I'm with you on it, I'm going in 100%. If it's bad, whatever, we go again. So that's awesome. I really like watching Umpty in content.
He's hilarious.
He's really funny, and, like, he just has a good attitude. I feel like he's, if I was a pro player, like a laner, I would want a jungler like that. You know, he's just like, he's not really playing for himself. He doesn't seem to get too down when things don't work out. And he's just kind of like a happy dude from what I can tell. So, like, he's easy to root for.
One of the spiciest things that we got when I had Umpty on our post-series couch interview, I asked him directly about the Cloud9 FlyQuest series and how that was going to go. And he was like, oh, I think Inspired is way better than Blabber. You know, I don't want to start any flame, but I think Blabber right now is not that good. And so he wanted to face Blabber. And he was like, yeah, I definitely think FlyQuest are going to win. And then after we see the series, we're like, wow, FlyQuest certainly did win that, and mm-hmm. now he's going to get what he wants going against Blaber, which is, I always feel like it's so dangerous to underestimate Blaber, but on this, by the same token, like, it just creates such a spicy matchup, and this is like the what Team Liquid wanted. And after those series, I feel like people are mostly going to be predicting Team Liquid to win too. It feels like Cloud9 are again going to come back in as the underdogs, with the pendulum swinging back from them blasting a series and being completely back, like the most back that we've seen.
It's so over.
Into being the most over that it's ever been again after getting 3-0'd.
Yeah, I think C9, I don't know. I haven't really seen their scrims or anything. Like, I'm not involved with the team in that way. But it does seem like they're not playing to their fullest. Like, I don't think any of the players right now are kind of like feeling super enabled. Like, to the NPC criticism, it does seem like they're playing kind of on the safe side, you know? Because I've always said, in my experience as a pro player, like, I played pro jungle for a really long time, and Blaber was always the player that I had the most trouble with. Even like playing internationally, playing against like some of these peak Korean teams from like 2013 to 2016, Blaber was definitely the player that gave me the most trouble. Like, just trying to figure out what he was going to do, predict him, punish him, like, it was hard. So he's absolutely a very good player, but sometimes you can just get into a rut. You know, you're trying to do right by your team, you're trying to do what you think you should be doing, and it just ends up not looking that good.
It was really fun because I remember watching it was Travis Gafford interview where he had Spawn and Impact rating, doing a tier list for enemy jungles or all junglers, and they ended up putting Blaber under River and Inspired, but I believe still like a tiny bit over Umpty, or at least, or maybe tied with Umpty. And the specifics that they gave were that Blaber can be a win condition for your team. He's one of those types of junglers. He might, from this season at least, was the specific data that they were rating him on, was that he hasn't been in the spots that they would expect him to be, but that he's still a jungler who, in a 1v1 scenario, has the mechanics to outplay, you know, solo laners and stuff. And they were like, most of the other junglers can't do that. So while they did rate him below several other junglers, they still gave him like that praise of like individual mechanics and ability.
And you can see, I mean, the All Pro Awards came out, I guess, since we last had an episode, right? Mm. And you can see that, like, when you actually look at the voting ballots, how the pros still have a lot of respect for these Cloud9 players based on how the scrims are going. We talked about that last week. We've talked about this a few times now, but the pros don't really watch the games on stage. They're largely voting from scrims for the most part. And, you know, there was a lot of criticism about, like, oh, like, Berserker, Vulcan, like, how did these guys get on All Pro? They don't deserve it. When you look at the voting ballots, it's almost entirely pro votes that are actually going towards these guys because of how they're performing in scrims. It's basically only votes that are coming. There was only one vote, I think, from the, like, you know, talent team broadcast side towards Berserker at all in the top three. I think Raz is the only one who voted for him. And then you look at even just first team alone, Revan voted for him. We have Shopify's head coach. We have FlyQuest head coach. We have Dignitas head coach voted for him. We have Inspired voted for Berserker, Rich voted for Berserker. Like, these are all just like first team votes, right? Like, a significant portion of the pros and stuff still have like Berserker up there, and Vulcan got like 5 or 6 first team votes, something like that as well. Blaber was getting more votes from pros also. So these are all players that clearly are still doing well in scrims and still have that respect, but they really haven't been able to, I think, find that level of consistency and stuff and that you're kind of expecting from them on stage. Berserker especially, I just think, to me, Berserker is the biggest gap from where I think his skill level is as a player and where his performance has been on stage out of any player on Cloud9. Because I think Berserker has just not been able to make it happen. Even in those situations where you feel like, oh, it's just a guaranteed win for Cloud9 because Berserker gets ahead, just doesn't really happen anymore. Like, game one, I think you can definitely chalk up a bit to draft, but like, they got this big bot lane advantage with the Kalista. you know, and then they were kind of outranged and just outplayed, I think, in the team fights from FlyQuest. Berserk couldn't really get anything done. But then in game three, you think, like, for sure, I think he had 5 kills,
had 5 kills really early.
And it was like, okay, for sure this game is over. Like, this is the most Berserker game ever. He gets these early kills. He's on the champion he's literally most associated with. And then Inspire just giga outplays him and finds him in every team fight and kicks him into the team, and he just dies without being able to do anything. And it's like, it's just they haven't been able to make it happen on stage, but clearly they're capable of it. You know, we did see a glimpse of it against 100 Thieves, but of course that was kind of like a weaker opponent. But they just need to be able to get it together. This is their last chance to be able to kind of show what they have. Otherwise, the narrative is very much, you guys sucked. You never lived up to the super team hype.
I actually wonder, and I kind of believe that they had so high expectations coming into this split. I have to imagine that's had some effect on them and been a partial reason for the way that they look, because, you know, when you have these expectations for being the super team, being the best, you kind of have that belief that, okay, if I just go into this game and I just don't mess up, we're gonna win, right? I just do my job, I don't give them openings, mm-hmm. and we'll win. But the problem is, like we were saying, you know, with the NPC thing, if everyone's doing that, and if you're not taking risks that you could be, if you're letting opponents get away with stuff that they shouldn't be able to, then, you know, you're not going to be that super team. So I wonder if that has gotten to them a little bit. They've had such high expectations. Mm-hmm. It's kind of rare you see a team that has those expectations kind of live up to it, because it never helps, right? If you're going to be the best, people thinking you're going to be the best doesn't help you get there. So
I'd say LCK, LPL are kind of the exception. Like, there are, you know, some super teams that have done pretty bad, but it's like, hey, JDG was pretty good, and like D1 adding players is pretty good. You know, like these are some teams that are pretty, there's some pretty stacked teams that add, you know, massive pieces and do go on to actually, you know, win worlds.
But I like this topic that you brought up when you're talking about when everyone is telling you that you are just so good and you're at the top, then you feel like you don't have to take as many risks, and you kind of lose that like hunger to make outplays. Because one of my favorite interviews of the last like 5 years was one where Showmaker was talking about, and he was talking to some top laner friend, I forget which team it was, but just another pro player top laner casually on a stream, about how he felt like, and this was before, you know, the kind of resurgence of Showmaker when he was having some less impressive LCK performances. He was like, yeah, I just feel like, over these years of playing, I have stopped looking for as many of these risky outplay I'm better than you moments. And he was asking his top laner friend, like, yeah, do you feel that also? You know, are we just getting old? Or, you know, what's the cause of this? And the other guy was like, yeah, you know, now that I think about it, you know, it's weird how this has kind of happened. And sometimes when you're at the top, it is so much more difficult to stay at the top than it is to climb there in the first place. Because when you're climbing there in the first place, you're like, it's me and my team versus everyone, you know, screw everybody else. Exactly. And you're climbing up, and it gives you more energy and more focus. And you're so focused on like your goal and getting to the peak. Then, whereas when you're at the top, you have this like, oh shit, you know, we got to keep all these other people away more, and it's more a defensive mindset, I guess. I thought that was cool.
That's a really good way to look at it, because, you know, when you're on the climb, you're not at the top. If you fall all the way back down, like, who cares? You just start climbing again. But like you said, when you're at the top, it's like you have everywhere you go is falling, basically. So you kind of get scared to do it. But I don't know, like, I don't think I would recommend this for teams, but when I have these ruts in teams, like, every team goes through it, but like, I know back on C9, like, one of our biggest breakthroughs was like, we just all got drunk for some scrims, and like, it was so crazy, bro, because it's like, you're so uptight, you have all these inhibitions, and then like, you just kind of let go and you just play. Like we're playing a game, right? Just have some fun. And like, I really think that could unlock teams. Recommending it. I think
especially
there's other
teams
ways
that have a lot of underage players.
Yeah.
Maybe not recommending it to them either.
I'm just saying what my experience.
They can drink apple juice.
Yeah.
Oh man, I already know our thumbnail, our title,
social clip. Yeah. Clips. The 17-year-olds can have, you know, juice boxes.
Yeah.
it's the whole reason that this profession of you know, mindset coaches and competitive coaches like exists, though, because that whole issue of getting past some of these mental hangups without the use of of alcohol or drugs is
therapy or just get drunk and do some scrims.
It sounds like such an like one of those old-fashioned stories of, you know, back in my day we just got drunk and did some scrims, boom, problem fixed type of things. But I definitely appreciate that, because you gain so much. There have been other stories. One that just reminded me of one of the coaches. They were like, you know what, part of the biggest difficulties of international events has been that we just go and scrim after scrim and we're getting slammed by the LPL or LCK team. So what we decided to do was, the day before our actual games, we're going to scrim some challenger team and everyone's going to be happy. And you know what, maybe we didn't learn as much, but everybody's going to be trusting their teammates and they're on the same page. And you just played some League of Legends, it's a fun video game with your squad, and you had fun, and you know, it's going to get you in a better mindset.
It's also the importance of sometimes being able to, it's like, just have good friendships with your teammates outside of the game.
Yeah. Right?
Because when teams do have that, and I think you guys had that on Cloud9, that was kind of some of the like magic of Cloud9, I think. And you can have these kind of like bonding experiences of just like doing fun things besides the game. It makes it easier to get past issues that you're having in game and stuff as well, because that's not like the only interaction, only, you know, kind of focus of your relationship. And confidence building scrims are absolutely a real thing. Like I always, when we would go to tournaments, it's like, you want to play the hardest possible teams you can to learn the most. But then as our last team that we practice against, I always just try to find some suckers that I knew we were going to 20-0 or whatever, and just feel really good about yourselves. Because if you got pounded right before you're about to go in a stage match, it is hard to not doubt your practice and to not have that in the back of your mind, be thinking, well, should I even be playing this? Should we even be picking this? Should we be doing something different? Like, this didn't work at all.
Yeah, dude, that's the whole thing with I don't really know what most teams are doing nowadays, but there was the discussion of like, you know, should we do a scrim before a stage game? And there's a while where some teams were trying it, you know, you'd play against your academy team before you go on stage. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword, because on one hand, you're getting warmed up. Like, you might not make those first game mistakes you might make on stage. But, like, if you get completely blasted in the scrim, like, I don't think you were better off having that practice game. So, yeah, it's always balancing, like, confidence versus, you know, the gameplay improvements.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, the mentality coming into this series from your previous stage games, TL are going to have a massive advantage then, because they just came out, they're slamming them. They're like, oh yeah, lower bracket. That's why people talk about lower bracket advantage sometimes, because you're finding your way up through the lower bracket. You're coming in off a win. Cloud9, they're coming off a 0-3, just got stomped. And even FlyQuest were surprised. Actually, my favorite part of the weekend was our interview with NukeDuck, and NukeDuck gets on the mic while they're going into the final game. And he's like, yeah, we're playing surprisingly well. like, we're just dumping on them. I just hope the team, you can stay focused and finish it out 3-0. And I was like, wow, yeah, even FlyQuest and coaching staff did not expect to just absolutely dump on Cloud9.
NukeDuck's coaching interviews are so funny to me. Like, I think he has, like, a good demeanor for a coach. You know, he's not like the like tyrant ruling over his team. He's just like there to help him out, and he's just like, yep, they picked Pyke, don't know what happened, bro, I didn't think it was a good idea, here we are, they wanted it, so be it.
Yeah
the just win strategy, that was really fun from 100 Thieves as well.
We also have to remember, though, in summer last year, so Cloud9 swept NRG in the upper bracket finals 3-0, then NRG actually, you know, beat TL in that super close series, and they beat them 3-1 in the finals. So C9 has a little bit of an opportunity to see if they can repeat history from the other side, shoe on the other foot, right? Because it's just because, and FlyQuest even said this, you know, they were talking all kinds of trash, but even on pros, they were saying, hey, like, we don't think we for sure won or anything like that. Like, we could definitely lose. You know, the Cloud9's really good. They have really good players if they have to play them again, because the teams can make serious adjustments and the games can look very different. League can be a very snowbally game. Sometimes slight adjustments can completely change the outcome of a series or a matchup. So it's going to be interesting, you know, if Cloud9 can actually get back up there or if it'll be TL that gets a rematch. Either way, we're going to be getting a rematch between two series that looked very different. But what do you guys think for that Saturday match? What would be your prediction between Cloud9 and TL?
I mean, it's so tough. I think I would still...
It's tough, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
We're trying to not eat some lemons over here, Kobe.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I would still vote for C9 just because, like, you know, they are kind of a pendulum, like you said, and they just got...
It was the most over.
They just swung to 0-3, so
yeah,
now,
so now they're going to be the most back.
Yeah.
That's just physics.
I don't know, man. I think those losses can definitely be a wake-up call for the team. It's like, wow, we were lost in the sauce there.
I feel like this whole season,
what
then?
What were we doing?
This whole season has been like, Cloud9, wake up. Boom. Okay, we're awake. All right, Cloud9, they went back to sleep. Oh, wake up again.
We just won. It's time for a nap.
Yeah. Oh. And it's like, wake up again. How many times do you got to get the...
Does he have narcolepsy? They're just falling asleep all the time? Coach, you haven't waken
them up. Yeah, I definitely agree, though. I would still... I'm on the side of Jensen in his interview afterwards where he was just coming off and he was like, well, after that, I literally cannot predict Cloud9 to win over Team Liquid. You know, all of our data for playoffs, the TL series versus FlyQuest and the Cloud9 series versus FlyQuest, they're kind of trying to compare, like, maybe not apples to apples, but, like... Not as crazy as like apples to pineapples. Apples more to like...
Maybe just different berries, you know?
Yeah. Maybe like berries. Red apples to green apples.
Okay. Uh-huh. Pretty similar.
Rather than the other way around. And so I definitely could see for sure the improvements there for Cloud9. And obviously their previous series, I was like, wow, Cloud9 are so back. You know, this is insane. Berserker and Vulcan were playing way better. Fudge was player of the series because of how well he dealt with Sniper. And their draft strategy was, I thought, really intelligent too. Attacking 100 Thieves topside and just like, wow, this team looks so well prepared. They look like they're performing well on stage. And so, you know, I'm open to... you know, eating a lemon, but I don't expect to.
I think as much as I don't want to eat the lemon, I have to predict TL based on just the series that we've
that
watched,
you saw,
right? I do think TL has just played better in playoffs. So if the two teams kind of like play like they played against FlyQuest, TL should be the better team. They should be the kind of more consistent team. But again, that being said, you know, Cloud9 has shown some really, really high highs, and they've shown that they're wildly inconsistent. So they could come in. I wouldn't be shocked if Cloud9 came in. If they play at their best, they could make the TL series look like the 100 Thieves series. Like, I think that could happen. But TL, I think, has been kind of more even keel, a little bit more consistent throughout playoffs. And I feel like if they're playing at that level...
After Cloud9's series against FlyQuest, I actually asked Blabber and JoJo what they thought about like, you know, their 100 Thieves series beforehand and like, you know, why it was so dominant, and then they got smashed by Fly, and they just kind of attributed it to the difference in skill level of those teams more than their own play, which I thought was kind of interesting. It wasn't like, you know, oh, we just had a really good day against 100 Thieves. They were like, nah, they're just bad and FlyQuest is good.
Ooh,
isn't that kind of frightening for Cloud9 fans then, if they're just like, they're just that much better than us?
I mean, I don't think they said they were better than us. They just said they had an off day. And, like, I talked to Blabber a little bit about it as far as, you know, like, what things in-game could have gone better. And, Blabber said himself, he's like, he didn't think he played well at all. It was below his standards. So, I don't know. I mean, it's very motivating as a player and team to get smashed like that. You know, it's like, you don't want to do that again. Whatever was going on in your head that led to that, you're probably...
I will never let this happen to us again.
It's real, though. It's real.
Yeah. I do agree, though, because if I put myself in the position of a Cloud9 fan and I hear that the only difference was our opponents, I actually want some cope. I want them to say, you know, we did this and this, and we're never like...
Berserker stubbed his toe before the series.
Yeah, I want some cope. I want some stories. I want to hear... that it was all just opponents and that's just what we are.
I mean, you feel better if they have excuses. I don't know. I kind of like the no excuses approach. Just be like, yeah, we played bad. It is what it is.
Yeah, at least I want to hear that we played bad, though. I don't. Well,
They said that. They weren't like.
Okay. I don't want to
hear. We brought our A game. Like, I honestly was really happy with how we got stomped.
Okay. Yeah, I at least need that.
It could have been worse. Our games could have been faster.
Oh, I actually thought that was really good. You're like, rough series today, guys. That was tough. What did you think about it?
I didn't think we'd have advantages at all. Yeah. Like, the fact that we were ahead was awesome.
We got ahead, didn't you see? What do you mean? We won for a little bit.
That's the best we've ever played. FlyQuest are just that much better than us. I know. Okay, good.
That's how it feels playing against like T1 or something in international events. You're just like, yeah, I don't even know why we lost, honestly. Like, something happened.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be exciting. So Saturday, obviously, not only is it qualifying to get to finals and actually try to win the LCS championship, whoever wins there will go to MSI. FlyQuest is also going. So top two teams do get to go to MSI. So it's actually really important to win on Saturday to get that final spot to go international. So both these teams really going to be wanting that. And APA was also tweeting, trash-talking JoJo a little bit because he actually got to knock JoJo out last year when he was on TL to deny JoJo from going to Worlds. So APA looking to try to knock JoJo out from another international showing here. Obviously, people look at these players very differently, but at the end of the day, if APA wins, then he gets to kind of hold that over him a little bit. And it's going to be really fun. Also on Sunday, if you didn't already know this, there's articles about it. You can read it. It's on the LCS Twitter, but there's an article on the LoL Esports website as well about everything that's going on for Sunday. So there's all kinds of stuff happening. But Sneaky and Meteos are going to be co-streaming the event from outside. And that will be
live co-stream.
Exactly. That will be the like broadcast that you're listening to. So it won't be the cast that you're going to be listening to. You're going to get to listen to Sneaky and Meteos outside. There's going to be other stuff going on. We just found out there's also going to be Dive stuff going on. So we're going to be doing some Q&A. I think some other talent are going to be out there doing some Q&A. Kangas is going to be out there hosting. So there's going to be a whole stage. We know all the tickets are sold out for outside and inside now. So that's really cool. Hopefully everyone still shows up. I know it's going to be raining. That's kind of a bummer, but they're going to have tent. They're going to have heating lamps. They're going to have all kinds of stuff, hopefully. So it'll be a really sweet setup. And we'll be there outside. If you're there in person, you can probably ask us some questions. Maybe you can throw us some questions from the audience or something. But also, if you are not going to be there in person, I think this stuff is also going to be streamed, to my understanding, online. So it should be before the pre-show comes on, before waiting room comes on. So if you want your questions in, you can put them in the YouTube comments. You can tweet them to us as well. And we might grab some questions from there to be able to answer. You'll also have the opportunity, remember, to submit those questions like even after Saturday. If you have some questions or things you want us to answer before the finals, after the we'll know the Saturday results, obviously. So you can definitely put that in there. But it should be really fun because I know there's going to be like an after party. A lot of the teams, if not all the teams, are showing up. Some of them are having like merch. And I think Immortals coming to the after party. They usually do boba and stuff. So there should be a lot of stuff going on there. And I think it should be a ton of fun.
For the question and answer part that we are doing is going to be from 11:30 to 12 if you are here in LA. Yeah, games are supposed to start around 1, so we're towards the very beginning of it. If you want to ask those questions, get there early. Yeah, definitely put some in the YouTube comments. Yeah. We are also, our next episode after finals is going to be Dive Awards and, of course, the bet payoff. But if you have awards that you want to give also, put those in the YouTube comments. We definitely want to fish around in those comments.
Yeah.
For some fan suggestions.
So it is, I think the first thing, I'm just pulling up the article. Yeah. So it opens at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So FanFest will open at 10 a.m. They're going to be devs there. So I think there's game devs. There's going to be like PBE stuff. So you can try out the new skins. You can try out Skarner on PBE. They're going to have, you know, different like meet the devs booths. There's going to be like trivia stuff. There's going to be people from the champions team as well. I think maybe the Skarner designer and some other people who like did some recent champions are going to be there. So you can ask them questions. There's a Dive Live Q&A. Of course, there's going to be the outdoor co-streaming stuff. And then there will be obviously all the stuff going on inside as well. And then there's post-game stuff with all the teams and whatnot. So it should be a really fun day. Going to be pretty exciting. Obviously, FlyQuest already qualified to MSI. They are waiting in the finals. We don't know for sure who their opponent is going to be, but we do know that they looked really, really strong. I think they played, you know, just such like a smart series, I felt like, against Cloud9. It felt like they were always kind of the ones dictating, you know, when things were going to happen. I thought Bwipo had some really intelligent moves, especially in the Taliyah game. I thought when JoJo was pushing out top, and they knew he had no TP, so the only way he could actually join was using his ultimate on Taliyah, Weaver's wall, and he just, like, placed a pink in the side brush by Raptors and just waited there knowing, like, that was the exact path that he would have to take. And then as soon as he ults, they see that he's coming, and he just steps out of the pink brush and stuns him off the wall and stuff. Like,
that was cool.
That was, I thought that was so smart, how they actually navigated and disengaged fights in the first game as well to deal with the super fake Kalista. Like, they'd go in and they immediately, like, you know, pull back and, like, throw the Renata ult out to create space so he couldn't actually stack up enough spears that would kill someone. I just thought they were team fighting really well. They're playing such an intelligent series. Jensen died zero times in the entire series, which is pretty insane. Inspired was having massive moments. It was just, like, such an impressive showing.
Dude, on that Whippo play, I've actually never been part of that interaction, but, like, I'm curious how hard it is to space that as Renekton, because, like, you have to be melee range to stun, but the wall will knock you back if you're too close. So, like, I don't know. That was pretty impressive. I hadn't seen that before. I remember just watching on the minimap, like, JoJo's coming in, and then he stopped. I was like, wait, did he actually just get stunned by Renekton?
Yeah, I've done it before with Volibear with the Q, because it gives you the extra range, and then you jump on them. But Whippo had really perfect timing and placement on his W, stunning him right off it. I just remember shouting as soon as I saw it on the minimap, because I saw the icons on minimap moving, and I was like, oh, my God, he knocked JoJo off the thing. He's not going to arrive. And then, like, the camera is on the team fight. So you just see the wall arrive, and then everyone else, it feels like in the team fight, is like playing around expecting a Taliyah to pop off, and then they don't. It was just that was such a cool moment live.
Yeah, I mean that whole series was just camping JoJo. Like, every single bush had an Inspired in it somehow. Like, anytime he went side lane, Inspired was sitting there. And I mean, one thing that Blabber was saying, and I've recognized too, is that FlyQuest, especially Inspired, are very good at playing through the side lanes. And I think that's something that's actually really hard to do, especially because it puts more of a burden onto your bot lane in support, because, you know, the typical macro in League is, like, you know, the jungler goes with the support and you put your wards down, which is actually what C9 was doing, and kind of a mistake they were making in the series was, I remember the first two games, C9 was getting 6 grubs, and so when you have that, it's like you know you have crazy side lane pressure. You can really, like, take the tier 2s in, like, a wave or two with the grubs. But instead of playing through the side lane with, like, Sejuani, Yone, they were trying to group through mid, and, like, you don't win that 3v3, so you're just getting pressured out. You're showing yourself. The other team has no pressure on them. But yeah, FlyQuest is really good at somehow, like, maintaining control of the map while allowing Inspired a lot of freedom to, like, you know, get his camps, set up a pick and side lane. And so, to me, that's really impressive, because I know that supports a lot of the time are, like, terrified to walk into the river unless their jungler is holding their hand. So being able to play like that puts a lot of pressure on the other team.
Yeah, I mean, they were super efficient with how they were playing the whole game, right? Like, how they're moving around the map, drawing extra pressure. Felt like they're never, like, allowing Cloud9 to find angles to actually engage on them when Jensen's out in a side lane. Jensen's very rarely, if ever, actually getting caught and killed in the side lane when he's pushing it out. It's all these small things that they're quietly doing really, really well that are creating, like, you know, more and more and more advantages, it felt like, through the game. Even the fact that it's, like, when you look back to the 100 Thieves series that Cloud9 played, where, you know, Fudge is getting counterpick and he's creating these massive advantages, Whippo blind picked all three games against Fudge, and it never felt like Fudge was able to create, you know, much of a significant advantage whatsoever from that.
Yeah, I mean, on the Inspired stuff too, not just, you know, some of his plays towards the mid game where he's hovering and camping JoJo, but that last play, that last Lee Sin play, where he jumped over the wall, back over the wall, and then went back in at the right time to go kick Berserker again. I was like, they were already, like, really winning, but they just, like, that was just the stamp on the entire series of, like, we are playing so much better right now. It's not even funny. I was like, this guy is insane. And he didn't have the crazy scoreline at that point, but he had done so many plays of setting up the team fight that they need to have, of creating a lot of space on enemy carries and then going in at the perfect time to just completely nullify, which we were talking about, the 5-0 Berserker, huge threat, Zeri, that was going to take over the game. And we were like, oh my God, we've seen this before. This is going to be it. Cloud9, they're still alive in this series. And to just surgically remove him multiple times with some of these plays were just insane. I feel like the hype for FlyQuest has never been higher.
Definitely not.
Actually, in the history of the entire organization, I think this is literally the peak.
Absolutely. I agree. Like, maybe there's some argument for, like, early on when Prince came.
Yeah, if we're just talking hype, I would say going into last year, there was a lot of hype, the which super team, quickly deflated.
The super team hype?
In regular season, in spring, it didn't deflate, though. It stayed high in regular season, didn't it? It was in summer that they did really poorly. Because I thought most of regular season, it was, like, at least early on, Prince was, like, smurfing
up. For me, though, I am way more hyped now than I was. Because, I buy into some, you know, super team hype and, like, new signings and stuff like that. But it's not the same as seeing a team just perform so incredibly well. You know, some of these plays are, like you're not going to see that replicated, you know.
Especially in
a game for a long time. I just feel like seeing that has me more hyped than – yeah, you know, the signings and rumors and super teams and stuff, I kind of buy into, but.
Especially going into finals weekend, to have your best games be like, you know, slamming Cloud9, who's the super team, going into finals weekend, qualifying to MSI like that was pretty crazy.
Zero deaths the whole series?
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's messed up. That's pretty messed up.
It was really interesting because Jensen, obviously, there was a lot of hype around him for the series, and I think he played really, really well. I think I still voted for Inspired for play of the series because I felt like Inspired set him up to succeed so incredibly well. I think Jensen did an amazing job, you know, with the pressure he was given and with the help he was given and the kind of that protection. But, yeah, Inspired score lines weren't super crazy or anything.
But his play was insane.
His play was so good, and putting on so much pressure early and never allowing Blaber to really make anything happen, you know, having these big moments later on in the team fights, I thought was really, really crazy. He just has been playing some of the best league he's been playing in a long time. I think he's definitely the best Western jungler currently. I think he's playing, like, you know, better than anyone else in LCS and LEC right now. He's been pretty amazing. So definitely be interesting to see if they can keep it up. We can't really do both prediction series because we don't really know, you know, how it's going to go going into it. But I feel like regardless of who comes up, they've got to be the favorites based on how well they played, based on the fact that they beat both these teams already. It's like they have to be the favorites to win the whole thing.
They have the upper bracket debuff, though. Like, they're
the curse.
They have the, oh, we just 3-0'd. Like, we're in MSI. Like, they might be the ones taking a little nap, if anyone. Like, I'm not saying they will.
You're Cloud9 coping right now. You're like, yeah. Those guys.
It's just how it goes, dude. Like, you don't have that fire under you when you're in that spot. You're thinking like, damn, bro, like, we just smashed them. I'm gonna pick Pike again in the finals. It's gonna be so sick. Like, I don't know, dude. I
wonder how often upper bracket wins versus lower bracket.
Never. It's never happened.
Upper bracket.
Yeah, zero times. Yeah, I think.
I literally just looked back in spring last year. C9 won from upper bracket. So
don't check the numbers.
I mean, if you're just here to be like a party pooper, like, you can leave. Yeah, no.
Nerd. I might
you can
agree.
Keep the numbers. I choose the magic.
Exactly. If not for the fact that FlyQuest all even themselves, like NukeDuck being so surprised that they were, you know, winning to that degree. Jensen afterwards also. Kind of shocked. I feel like they were more shocked than they were like extremely overconfident or anything, or, you know, on the precipice of getting lazy. I don't know. Inspired suite afterwards, where he has the Ronaldo and some other. I don't know anything about soccer/football. But I'm assuming the person, I know who Cristiano Ronaldo is. I'm assuming the other guy in the picture that
he's. Was it the cigar thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Messi.
Okay, Messi. Yeah.
Wait, you don't know who Messi is?
I don't know.
That's like crazy, bro.
You're going to get roasted for that one.
Like I said.
That's like not knowing who Michael Jordan is, though.
Of soccer/football. What is, I didn't pay attention to at all. I know the name.
Okay.
But the picture? Okay. Nope. Yeah. I didn't know.
I've got to say, I'm a little bit mind blown, but okay.
I didn't know who
Messi
the person is.
Probably got to be one of the most famous people in the whole world. He's considered by most people the greatest football player of all time. And he just won the World Cup.
Even better than Tom Brady?
Even better than Tom Brady.
That's how American I am. I don't pay attention to that.
He's playing in the MLS now, too. You didn't hear about any of that.
I mean, his World Cup run last year was like some, I don't know. It's like the Danny Pinto at Barron thing, right? He got like a hat trick in the finals to like win the World Cup. Like, didn't hear any of this?
I mean, no. Like I said, the name I know. Okay. But the picture, I didn't know.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Never watched
respect.
That.
Respect.
Really? Because it doesn't sound like that's respectful.
No, respect. Yeah. That's impressive. I think it's harder to not know who he is than it is to know who he is. So really, it's more impressive. Like, you're more impressive here than me knowing. It's like,
yeah,
everybody knows Leo Messi. No one doesn't know Leo Messi.
Honest,
like, you're the one percenter here. Yeah, we're just the common plebs.
I'm kind of disappointed that now I do know. I'm kind of sad now that I'm broken.
Well, Mia said the drunken scrims. Maybe you should just do a drunken dive. You can forget it really quick.
Okay.
You can maintain your status not knowing who
he
is. I
just have to delete the last 5 minutes of my memory. All right.
Yep. No problem.
Going back to the
yeah, what series? Was even the point? What?
Going back to the series, though, I'm a firm believer that teams are not completely defined by their most recent performance, because I think teams can vary wildly on the day for how well they're going to play. Like, you know, obviously it's not like the best team's going to become the worst team, the worst team's going to become the best team. Like, there's, but you're the way you play on any given day, like, I think there's a range for players. Like, you know, maybe you didn't get a good night's rest, maybe you didn't have enough.
I drunk scrims last night.
Yeah, maybe you're super hungover. I don't know. Like,
you're having some drunk stage games.
maybe. You never know. So I think that I think it's going to be competitive. I don't think it's like Cloud9 is just going to flop and that FlyQuest is going to stomp everyone. Yeah. I think it'll be very hard to predict. I think that these teams are going to have like a week to prepare. They're going to be able to reflect on what other teams are doing well, what they weren't doing well, and I think it's going to be hard to predict for sure.
I'm looking back and I was really curious about the lower bracket, upper bracket thing. It's actually, so out of the last six times, it's exactly 50-50. So it's three times team won from the upper bracket, three times they won from the lower bracket. Since
upper bracket has won almost never.
Pretty much never.
Half the time, as in never.
Yeah,
also, all the times it was from upper bracket, it was Cloud9 the last three times over those couple of years.
So Cloud9 is going to win.
But they're in the lower bracket.
Yeah, but either lower bracket wins or Cloud9 wins.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
How about those for stats?
Yeah, but what about the time? What about the time last where they lost in the upper bracket?
It's all,
don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Honestly, it sounds like it's 50-50 to me. Either they win or they lose.
Yeah, so. Like all games of League of Legends, you have 50-50 chance.
Yeah.
Me versus Jovi in mid lane, 50-50. Win or lose.
Yeah, I could see that. Right? That sounds about right.
It's 50-50.
I would take those odds.
Yeah, you win or you lose. What can you say? There you go. Well, it's going to be a really exciting final weekend to the LCS. We're going to send our last team to MSI. FlyQuest already going. We're also going to be crowning the champion. I guess the tickets are already sold out for Sunday. I don't know if they're sold out for Saturday. Probably are. But if you want to go, you should check it out, because we're all going to be there. We're going to be doing the dive stuff, and we are going to be seeing you there. Until then, that's going to be it for this episode for now. Keep sending in your questions. You can use the YouTube comments as well. We've been grabbing some from there. Appreciate everyone who's been submitting those and sending them in on Twitter. I might grab some for either the finals, or we'll probably do a community episode sometime between LCS ending and MSI starting. So we can maybe grab some of those as well. And make sure you're tuning in. It's going to be an hour pre-show on both days. So the actual pre-show is going to start earlier, but the game time will be the same. It is 1 p.m. Pacific, Cloud9 versus TL Honda. That is going to be Saturday. And then, of course, the Sunday match will be the winner of that versus FlyQuest. We will see you all there.